Good afternoon and welcome to the first installment of the podcast series from the Section Advisory Group on Pain and Palliative Care of ASHP. My name is Chris Herndon. Today we'll be discussing the cardiovascular side effects of the opioids as we use them in pain management and palliative care. While this is not meant to be an all-encompassing or comprehensive review of this topic, what we will do today is we'll spend a couple minutes briefly looking at the hemodynamic and cardiac conductance side effects of the commonly used opioids. Let's start with the hemodynamic changes. Opioids affect hemodynamic stability in patients primarily through two different encompassing pathways. The first one is through the effects on histamine release. The other one is predominantly due to inhibition of reflex vasoconstriction. So when looking at the hemodynamic effects of opioids, it's important to note that those agents that are more specific for the mu opioid receptor in most cases are going to have a greater effect on mast cell lysis and subsequent histamine release. Those opioids that have an overlapping effect on the delta opioid receptor, such as those as fentanyl and its congeners, will usually have less hemodynamic effects. So these hemodynamic effects, which are usually negligible, especially when the patient is lying supine, result in peripheral vasodilation, decreased peripheral resistance, and direct inhibition of the baroreceptor reflexes. So what winds up happening is while patients may not notice this specifically, this can result in orthostatic hypotension in a normal healthy patient or otherwise worsening of hypovolemic shock in a patient who is volume depleted. So when we look at the effects of opioids directly on the myocardial tissue, what's interesting to note is that often we use morphine when patients come into the emergency department for angina, but what we don't know is exactly how morphine provides analgesia to these patients. When specifically looking at its effect on the myocardium, we have noted in specific studies that we see a decrease in oxygen consumption by the myocardial tissue. We see a decrease in left ventricular end diastolic pressure when opioids, specifically morphine, has been administered. In addition to these effects, we also see that morphine has negative effects on preload, as well as possessing negative inotropic and chronotropic effects. This explains a lot of the hypotension that is often seen when initiating or titrating opioids in patients, especially that are volume compromised. So, with these thoughts in mind, it's important to note that opioids should be used with extreme caution in those patients that have either a decreased blood volume, or B, cor pulmonale or right-sided heart failure. It's interesting to note that when specifically looking at morphine's use for those patients that are being seen in the emergency department for angina, for instance, we still haven't really delineated whether or not the analgesic effects of morphine in this patient population is actually due to effects at nociceptors and second-order neurons, or if it's a direct effect on the cell's interpretation of acid changes in that hypoxic tissue area. So, moving on to the arrhythmogenic potential of opioids, the interesting thing to note when you go back and look at the literature is, in actuality, many of the opioids have anti-arrhythmic properties, and this oftentimes has to do with their effects on cardiac conductance. Now, obviously, we don't use opioids as anti-arrhythmics. However, there is data, especially in animal models, to suggest that some of the more selective mu opioid agonists do have effects on ventricular repolarization, and we'll talk about that a little bit as it specifically addresses methadone. The arrhythmogenic potential of methadone has become something of great discussion as of recent, and a number of individuals as well as monitoring boards have developed specific guidelines for how to attempt to prevent arrhythmogenic potential of methadone. The arrhythmogenicity of methadone primarily revolves around its potential effects on the corrected QT interval and subsequent risk for developing torsades de pointe. Recently, an independent panel was convened to attempt to put together specific monitoring parameters for methadone and to prevent potential QTC prolongation and resultant torsades to point. These guidelines were published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, January 20th, 2009. So it's important to note when we discuss methadone and its arrhythmogenic potential to identify other items that may potentially predispose patients to QTC prolongation. When looking at these items, it's specific to note that hypokalemia, structural heart disease, the history of long QTC syndrome, as well as concurrent administration of cytochrome P450 inhibitors, specifically those related to methadone, all predispose patients receiving methadone to QTC prolongation. The mechanism by which methadone prolongs the QT interval is actually quite interesting. When looking at the effects on repolarization, methadone's primary mechanism of QT prolongation appears to be due to inhibition of the delayed rectifier potassium ion current. This inhibition of the delayed potassium rectifier current appears to be a dose-related phenomena. Interestingly, as doses increase of methadone, we also start to see negative chronotropic effects of this drug, primarily through calcium channel antagonism, as well as an anticholinesterase type property. Now, it's important to note that these are not the first set of guidelines to recommend EKG monitoring for patients on methadone therapy. The United Kingdom highlights monitoring recommendations specifically for patients on high-dose methadone, which they define as greater than 100 milligrams per day. Additionally, the Canadian monitoring group, known as the Canadian Methadone Maintenance Guidelines, recommend that methadone doses exceeding 150 milligrams per day receive EKG monitoring, and that also repeat EKG monitoring be performed at doses approaching 180 to 200 milligrams per day. I believe it's important to note that in reality, none of these guidelines really serve as a panacea as far as moving us into the direction of truly standardized monitoring approaches for methadone. The main problem with methadone monitoring is that there's two predominant patient categories that use this medication. Obviously, those who suffer from opioid addiction and are being weaned or treated for cravings, and obviously those who use the medication for chronic pain management. With that in mind, this independent expert panel put forth five different recommendations, which we'll outline here. These recommendations include disclosure, clinical history, screening, risk stratification, and monitoring of drug interactions. Recommendation 1 specifically states that clinicians should inform patients of the arrhythmia risk when they prescribe methadone. Recommendation 2 includes clinicians should ask patients about any history of structural heart disease, arrhythmia, or syncope. Remember, all of these serve as potential risk factors for QT prolongation. Specific recommendation number 3 involves screening. These panel's recommendations are to obtain a pretreatment EKG or electrocardiogram for all patients to measure the baseline QTC interval and then follow up with an electrocardiogram within 30 days and annually. Additional electrocardiography is recommended if the methadone dosage exceeds 100 milligrams per day or if patients have unexplained syncope or seizures. So this recommendation is more in line with the United Kingdom recommendations versus the Canadian methadone maintenance guidelines. This panel's recommendation number 4 points out that if the QTC interval is greater than 450 milliseconds but less than 500 milliseconds, it's important to discuss the potential risks and benefits with the patients and monitor them more frequently. If the QTC interval exceeds 500 milliseconds, consider discontinuing or reducing the methadone dose, or eliminating contributing factors such as drugs that promote hypokalemia, or using alternative therapy. It's important to note here that QTC intervals greater than 500 milliseconds have been shown to increase the risk of torsades and life-threatening ventricular arrhythmias by approximately fourfold. I think it's also important to note that this is the first discussion of gender independent recommendations, as it's known that women typically have a longer QT interval than do men. And moving on to recommendation number 5, clinicians should be aware of interactions between methadone and other drugs that possess QT interval prolonging properties or slow the elimination of methadone. So, in summary, opioids can decrease peripheral vasodilation, decrease peripheral resistance, and inhibit baroreceptor reflexes, resulting in potential orthostatic hypotension and decreases in blood pressure at higher doses. To summarize the cardiac conductance properties of opioids, and specifically methadone's arrhythmogenic potential, we'll go back to the recently published guidelines and their recommendations. Number 1, clinicians should always provide informed consent when they prescribe methadone. Number 2, clinicians should always ask patients about history of structural heart disease, arrhythmia, or syncope. Recommendation 3, we should always obtain pre-treatment EKGs to measure QTC interval and then follow up with EKGs within 30 days and annually. Additional EKGs are recommended if the methadone dosage exceeds 100 milligrams per day or if the patients have unexplained syncope or seizures. Recommendation number 4, if the QTC interval is greater than 450 but less than 500, discuss potential risks and benefits with patients and monitor them more frequently. If the QT interval exceeds 500 milliseconds, consider discontinuing or reducing the methadone dose, eliminating contributing factors, or using alternative therapy. Recommendation number 5 is that clinicians should be aware of interactions between methadone and other drugs that possess QT interval prolonging properties or slow the elimination of methadone. I think it's important to note within this podcast that while this does provide a snapshot of the current cardiovascular effects of opioids and the new recommendations for monitoring EKGs and methadone, this podcast should not be necessarily interpreted as a guide to prescribing methadone. Methadone is an extremely dangerous medication that should be used only by clinicians familiar with its use. Thank you for tuning in to the first ASHP Section Advisory Group Pain and Palliative Care podcast. I hope this was beneficial, and have a wonderful day.